Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu has faced disputes with Turkey's president. Now, the head of the ruling AKP party says he plans not to seek re-election as party chief. Mario Ritter has this story.
Turkey's Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu has announced he will not seek re-election as the head of the ruling party. Davutoğlu spoke Thursday after a meeting of the Justice and Development Party, or AKP, in Ankara. He told reporters that a change in the position of chairman was needed for the good of the party. The ruling party leader also serves as the prime minister. The move means that a new party leader will be chosen at the AKP Party Congress on May 22nd. Davutoğlu said, "I have no sense of failure or regrets in taking this decision." The prime minister said that his resignation was not his choice, but a necessity. He noted that there were no hard feelings. The prime minister suggested he will remain as a ruling party legislator. He also pledged loyalty to Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Erdogan said that it was the prime minister's own decision and he wished him well. The resignation is not effective immediately. The AKP will hold an emergency congress on May 22nd to elect a new party leader who would take the place of Davutoğlu. President Erdogan and Prime Minister Davutoğlu met late Wednesday but reportedly failed to smooth over their disagreements. Davutoğlu has not been a strong supporter of some of Erdogan's policies. These include potential changes to the constitution to make the largely ceremonial presidency into a powerful position. Relations between the president and prime minister have been tense. Turkish media had reported that Davutoğlu was planning to visit the United States on May 2nd to meet with President Barack Obama and Vice President Joseph Biden. Some reports say this angered Erdogan and the visit was canceled. The disagreement between the two politicians became especially strong last week. That is when the AKP's 50-member executive committee stripped Davutoğlu of his power to appoint local and provincial party leaders. The problems between the two leaders come as Turkey deals with the influx of refugees from Syria's conflict. In addition, the country is combating violence linked to Islamic State and Kurdish militants. It is also seeking to become a member of the European Union. I'm Mario Ritter.
Around 100,000 refugees from Cambodia settled in the United States beginning in the 1970s. Many of them have struggled with poverty and mental health problems. Dan Friedel brings us more.
Some people think their problems will be solved if they just leave home and move far away. perhaps to another country. Yet resettling in a new country is not always easy. Take a look at the thousands of people who left Cambodia from the 1970s to the 1990s. Many of them came to the United States to escape from the Khmer Rouge, which ruled Cambodia from 1975 to 1979. Up to 2 million Cambodians are estimated to have died during that period. Mary Scully is a healthcare worker in the U.S. state of Connecticut. She has spent over 35 years working with Cambodians, both in refugee camps and in Connecticut. She now directs a mental health organization called Khmer Health Advocates. Scully says 60% of the Cambodian refugees she worked with, who became parents in the U.S., struggled with mental health problems. This prevented them from having good relationships with their children. If they have flashbacks, if they get anxious, then they go from being connected to being disconnected with their kids, which is very confusing for the child, she said. Jennifer Ka grew up in the United States. Her parents left Cambodia to escape the Khmer Rouge. She says she could never understand why her father always seemed angry. He was really never there and present with us because he was stuck in his trauma. He never told me what happened to him in the Khmer Rouge, Ka said. Her parents had trouble earning money after they arrived in the U.S. There were few good job training programs for refugees. Many refugees received financial assistance from the government. However, much of that support ended when the U.S. made changes in the government's welfare program in 1996. The changes ended much of the federal aid available for immigrants and refugees. Mary Scully says the Cambodian refugees she met suffered from feelings of anxiety and depression. They also had headaches and bad dreams. Other health problems, like diabetes, also came up in her research. Cambodian Americans have 2 times the rate of type 2 diabetes compared with the total U.S. population. While healthcare workers knew what kind of problems the refugees had, they were unable to do enough to help. Scully says she thinks Cambodian refugees in the U.S. are suffering in silence. Eric Tong teaches at the University of Texas. He says he thinks the U.S. government did not do a good job of helping Cambodian refugees settle and thrive in the United States. There is a big difference between coming to the U.S. as a refugee and becoming a U.S. resident. Tong says the long-term support many people needed just was not available. The resettlement policy doesn't pay attention to, for instance, job training, he says. It didn't allow people to heal from their trauma before we pushed them into sweatshop jobs. The problems continued for the children of refugees, born to parents who struggled to establish themselves in the U.S. They also had trouble following through with their schooling and finding good jobs and housing. Tong says some do not go to college, and many are profiled, targeted by the criminal justice system, and subjected to deportation to Cambodia. Jennifer Ka says she found a way to deal with some of her problems. During her childhood in the U.S., she was always worried about her father. She says she thought he did not like her. It was not until she was an adult and made a trip to Cambodia that she started to understand why her father's life was so difficult. I started to deeply understand the pain my parents suffered from the genocide that I was not aware of before, she says. Now she feels at home in Cambodia. I'm Dan Friedel.
Almost half of the children in Pakistan do not go to school. A man who was once such a child now works to help children be educated by operating an informal school. Christopher Jones Cruz has more.
A man in Pakistan who did not go to school as a child because he was too poor is now working to help children get an education. It is estimated that Pakistan has 25 million children who do not go to school. That is the second highest number in the world. Only Nigeria has more. Many Pakistani children must work to earn money for their families. Mohammed Ayub was once one of those children. He is now a firefighter. He also operates a small school. VOA recently visited the school in the capital, Islamabad. Ayub started with just one student in 1982. He saw a boy cleaning cars for days. He asked him, "Why don't you go to school?" The boy answered that his parents were dead, and he had to work to help support his five brothers and three sisters. That affected Ayub. He was also an orphan, and he, too, had five brothers and three sisters he worked to help support. He says, "When my father died, everyone who came to the funeral said they were sorry, but no one helped." He sold newspapers and did other work to earn enough money to pay school fees for his brothers and sisters. Ayub wanted to help the young boy who washed cars, but he did not have enough money to pay the boy's school fees. So he offered to teach him. Today, Ayub teaches many children at his informal school in a public park. Some of the children attend other schools in the morning, but come to Ayub in the afternoon to get help with their homework. Ayub has helped thousands of poor children since he began teaching. Many of them come from very poor areas near the park called slums.
I used to particularly argue with kids who work. I used to ask girls, "Why are you washing someone's dishes or their clothes? Why don't you study?"
One of the children he urged to attend classes was Farhat Abbas. Ayub found him working with his friends about 12 years ago.
He followed us back home. He told our parents he wanted to teach us and asked them to come check out his school.
Today, Abbas is taking classes at a college and is helping Ayub. While many children are out of school, those who do attend classes often get a poor quality education. Information gathered by an aid group shows half of all Pakistani children in the fifth grade do not understand basic mathematics and cannot read a story in their language. A policy group based in Islamabad reports Pakistan spends less on education than any other country in South Asia. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Americans are divided about how involved the United States should be in the problems of other countries. They also do not agree whether U.S. economic involvement in other nations, such as trade, is good or bad. These are some of the findings of a report released Thursday by the Pew Research Center. The poll was conducted last month and questioned 2,000 voters. According to the report, 57% of Americans want the U.S. to deal with its own problems, and they say they want other countries to do the best to solve their own problems. Among Americans, 41% say the United States is doing too much in the world. 28% say the United States is doing about the right amount, and 27% say the U.S. is doing too little, Pew said. There is a difference in opinion among supporters of the two major U.S. political parties. Among Republicans, 62% say the U.S. should first deal with its own problems. Among Democrats, 47% have the same opinion, according to Pew. And 55% of Republicans see economic involvement with other nations as a good thing, compared to 44% of Democrats. The poll results are important this week because the race for American president has thinned. Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas and Ohio Governor John Kasich dropped out of the race this week. Businessman Donald Trump is the remaining Republican presidential candidate. Among those Republicans who told Pew they support Trump, 65% say U.S. involvement in the global economy is a bad thing. Trump has promised to renegotiate trade deals to benefit the U.S. The two remaining Democratic presidential candidates are former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. Among Clinton supporters, 55% say they see U.S. involvement in the global economy is a good thing, while 37% see it as bad, according to the Pew report. Among Sanders supporters, 47% see it as good and 48% as bad. Republicans and Democrats are also divided about if the U.S. is more or less powerful than before. Nearly 70% of Republicans say the U.S. has become less powerful compared to nearly 25% of Democrats, Pew reported. Republicans and Democrats view the threat of global warming very differently. Nearly 80% of Democrats see global warming as a big threat. Among Republicans, around 25% see it that way. Republicans and Democrats also disagree about refugees coming from Syria and Iraq. Nearly 75% of Republicans see it as a major threat, compared to about 40% of Democrats. On other issues, there is more agreement. 80% of Americans agree that Islamic State militants are a big threat to the well-being of the United States. 70% of Americans consider cyber attacks from other nations as a big problem. 66% of Trump supporters want more spending on U.S. military. 43% of Clinton supporters and 25% of Sanders supporters want more military spending. I'm Bruce Alpert.
this is What's Trending Today. The English rock band Radiohead once recorded a song called How to Disappear Completely. Earlier this week, the band appeared to have done just that. On Sunday, Radiohead slowly started to disappear from the internet. Its Facebook posts and tweets were erased. The band's website went white. Radiohead fans quickly began discussing the possibility of a new album. It would be the band's 9th studio album. Then, on May 3rd, the band posted a 15-second video clip on its previously empty Instagram account. The video showed an animated bird made of clay. Later that day, it posted another video on Instagram of several animated clay people wearing masks, circling around a woman tied to a tree. And then finally came a music video for the band's first new song in 5 years. The song is called Burn the Witch. Scenes from the short Instagram videos appear in the music video. It has already been viewed more than 7 million times on YouTube. The video begins with a man arriving in a new town. At first, the town seems scenic and friendly. But the man begins to see strange things going on. The end of the animated video shows people gathered around a huge wooden structure shaped like a person. The man is told to climb a tall ladder and go inside of the wooden structure. A woman then sets the whole thing on fire. Fans immediately started trying to understand the meaning of the song and the music video. Verpi Ketu helped create the band's new music video. She recently spoke with Billboard magazine about Burn the Witch. She told Billboard that she believes the band wanted the video to bring attention to Europe's refugee crisis, especially the blaming of different people, the blaming of Muslims, and the negativity in Europe. Radiohead begins a world tour later this month. And that's what's trending today. I'm Anna Mateo.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. This week, we are looking at more commonly confused words in the English language. Today's subject is homophones. Homophones are two or more words that sound alike but have different meanings or spellings. It is easy to understand the difference between some homophones. For example, most English learners understand the difference between the word ate, the past tense of eat, and ate, the number. But other homophones can be difficult, even for native English speakers.
One set of commonly confused homophones are the words bear and bear. Let's start with bear, B-E-A-R. Of course, as a noun, a bear is a large, heavy animal with thick hair and sharp claws. But the word bear, B-E-A-R, can also be a verb. It can mean to accept or get through something, usually something difficult. The verb bear is often used with the modal verb can and a negation. Using this structure, cannot bear sometimes means strongly dislike. If you travel to a very cold place in the middle of winter, you might say, I cannot bear the cold weather. Bear can also mean to assume or accept something, such as a cost or responsibility. For example, the man must bear full responsibility for his actions. Bear can also sometimes mean to carry. For example, Americans often talk about the right to bear arms or the right of citizens to possess a gun. Sometimes people make jokes about this expression. They replace the meaning of bear in this example with its meaning as a noun. The phrase then means that people have a right to possess a bear's arm. The past tense of bear, B-E-A-R, is bore, B-O-R-E. For example, you might hear a sentence like, "The company bore all of the expenses." In the present tense, bore is a verb in its own right, but it has no relation to the past tense of bear.
Now, let's turn to the word bear, B-A-R-E. Bear is mostly used as an adjective. It means not having a covering or not covered by clothing, shoes, or something else. If you just moved to a new home, the walls could still be bare. And if you take off your shoes and socks before entering a room, you will have bare feet. As a verb, bare, B-A-R-E, is similar to its adjectival meaning. To bare means to remove the covering from something. It can also mean to show or expose. For example, an angry animal might bare its teeth. The past tense of bare, B-A-R-E, is bared, B-A-R-E-D.
Next, we turn to three more homophones, sight, sight, and sight. All three words sound exactly the same. Sight, S-I-G-H-T, means one of your five senses. As a noun, it is the ability to see. Sight can also mean someone or something that is seen. For example, the sunset last night was a beautiful sight. Another meaning of sight is a famous or interesting place in an area. If you take a trip to the United States, a tour guide might show you all the sights in New York City or Washington, D.C.
But some of those famous sights are also sites, S-I-T-E-S. The word site means a place where something important has happened. It can also be a place where something is, was, or will be located. So, if you like history, you might want to visit an important battle site, S-I-T-E, near Washington, D.C. Site has a few other meanings. It is also short for website.
The third homophone, site, C-I-T-E, is a verb. It can mean to write or say the words of a person, book, or another source. It can also mean to mention something, usually to support an idea or opinion. When you write research papers in school, for example, you cite other sources to support your argument.
So, if you ever have a disagreement with a friend about the English language, you can always cite, with a C, Everyday Grammar by visiting our site with an S.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.